Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
Doing fantastic today, Tim. We're coming in again with another part of this unsolved murder of Sheila Shepherd, these remastered episodes that we've been so excited to, I guess, introduce to new listeners. So that's coming up. But before we get to that, Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for asking. And yeah, you're right. I am excited to continue sharing this series on the unsolved murder of Sheila Shepherd from Saratoga Springs in 1980.
November 1980, Sheila was found dead inside of her apartment on Church Street. She had been asphyxiated and she was stabbed in the abdomen after she had died. That was post-mortem. It is Saratoga Springs' only unsolved murder, and Terry was actually present, not in the apartment. Her husband went into the apartment and discovered Sheila's body, but Terry was outside on the sidewalk with Sheila's mother, and since then, she's been a staunch advocate for justice in Sheila's case, and we were fortunate enough to have lunch with her, and then we went to Sheila's grave, and it was a really sobering moment.
And that part is coming up in the next episode in this series. So we hope you enjoyed this one, and go back and check out the rest of these if you haven't yet. I think that would be beneficial before you continue. And it is remastered, and there is video now available on YouTube where there never was before. So you can check that out at youtube.com/missingCSM to see video.
And keep the comments coming, because again, we're reintroducing, or for the first time introducing, this story to listeners. And if you see something, if you hear something that strikes a chord, maybe you're from that area. We've been getting a lot of good comments on this. So keep those coming, because you never know. I mean, this seems like a very solvable murder. So just watch closely, listen closely, and again, if you hear anything that strikes a chord, make sure you send a message.
And this episode is packed with a lot of info. I know the runtime isn't terribly long, but there is a lot of info in there. Some of the things that we'll talk about in this interview with Terry, Sheila's aunt, are Sheila's relationship with her estranged husband, Richard Shepherd, his weird behavior at the funeral, which we kind of break down. And I want to invite our listeners to join us at the end of the interview with Terry, because we're going to pop back in for an outro where we can break this down a little further without, spoiling it all here in the intro.
And you mentioned that this is a little bit short on the runtime in comparison to our usual episodes. That is partially the reason why you mentioned there's a lot of info. So you don't want to overwhelm people, because it's a lot of important information. And we do have more episodes coming out. So it's not like this was at the tail end and it was just the leftovers. It's just very dense. So we will be coming in later on to explain and maybe parse out some of these elements of this episode. So just stay tuned till the end there. And if anybody out there, any of the listeners, have any information, or you know of somebody who might have information, please call the Saratoga Springs Police Department at 518-584-8477.
And we're going to throw it a commercial here. We'll be right back with our interview with Sheila's aunt, Terry.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch Unsolved Mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate, who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore. And in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
Our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored.
Was there any violence in the relationship between her and her? Like anything that you knew of between her and her husband? When they're married and when they
I can't say separated? Violence, but there was, they were unhappy.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, she, one of the reasons was, you know, she was straight at the time and he was smoking a lot of pot and they had the baby and he was drinking a lot and she just couldn't take much more of it.
Yeah.
But I did end up with the baby.
After the
yes.
murder?
No, before, in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And then he came, he got out of the Army and came and got her. And he came up here and dropped her off at his parents.
Who live in
Whispering Saratoga. Pines, yeah.
Whispering Pines.
Whispering yeah. Pines.
Which they own.
Yeah.
Okay.
He thought that if he took oops, I didn't want to say her name. If he took her, he'd get her back.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't going to happen. So she came back, and I wanted my baby back. Mm-hmm. So she was trying to get a job and get her life straightened out.
We were just talking about the trunk with the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So you had brought it on Wednesday and left it outside for her to, outside of her apartment door
yeah.
to bring in. And then when you went there on
Sunday. It was gone.
And you presume that she had brought it
brought
into
in
her
the house.
Into her
yeah,
apartment.
Who's to say, I didn't even think of that somebody took them out of the trunk. But
right, that's what I was, it's possible if
it
they're out
possible.
In like a common area and there's at least seven apartments there. I know she was apartment 7, so it's a bigger, mm-hmm. Bigger yeah. apartment complex. Why someone would want them though?
The trunk wasn't locked, right? It didn't have a lock on it?
My God, I can't remember that.
Okay. And were they in like a little box or in an envelope?
In an envelope.
Okay. It just seems like such a weird thing to take if you're going to take.
If you don't
yeah.
know.
What else was in the trunk? Clothes?
Clothes. Yeah, that would be more natural to take, I feel like.
Than someone's personal pictures, yeah. unless you have a weird thing about that.
Do you recall if she, I think you mentioned something about her photos in her apartment. Do you know for a fact that she did have them inside and had looked at them? Before?
She told her mother she had them.
Oh, she did. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was after Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it would be just like her to go, you want to see my baby? And
yeah.
this is in California and this is in Colorado. And
okay.
The only thing in her stomach, I think, was a piece of bubble gum.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
We were talking about that. I didn't remember if they gotten back to you with stomach content. Analysis, like after part of the autopsy.
Bubble gum.
That was it.
Yeah.
So she swallowed. She was chewing bubble gum and she swallowed it.
Yeah. So she hadn't eaten.
How long does it take to, like, digest food? I'm just trying to think of the last time she would have eaten.
Yeah. I don't know. Takes a long time.
I say bubble gum takes 7 years or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bubble
something
gum.
Crazy.
Bubble gum's gonna stay there.
Dummy, stick to your ribs. Yeah.
I don't
so
know. They say,
dinner,
right?
They say we eat dinner. Lunch pushes dinner. Dinner pushes.
Yeah.
Most of the digestion is going to the intestines.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long it actually stays in the stomach.
Right.
Also broken down
I don't
by
know.
Stomach
I've
acid.
Had yeah. enough tests to know that following your intestines, the barium, it was 6 hours before they could get through the food digesting, so she probably on a diet and just wanted to chew some bubble gum.
Yeah.
Well, there was a thing, and I remember she had an article circled or something about some kind of diet.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. God.
She used to do
the bubble gum diet.
Right. Yeah, it's supposed to trick your
brain. She used to do this
brain.
All the time, seeing if she was, you know, if her fingers were swollen.
Really?
Yes.
I can't remember if it was you or somebody else was telling us that she was always trying to lose weight.
Always trying. You know, I don't know where she got it from. My sister was obsessive.
There was also, I think, in the, I think they found like, what's the diet pill they used to sell in the 80s? They used to have all the little.
Like a stacker before that.
Used to be over the counter. Yeah. Dexatrim or something. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That does not surprise me at all.
They found like a wrapper of packaging on it. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Do other people in your family share your beliefs about her ex-husband?
Well, my mother did.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, Annette and them were just too young to even.
Yeah.
Even form an opinion, but I don't know if any of them want to do a phone interview, but I don't think they knew her as well as I did. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to babysit when they first moved back. I babysat and I got $7 a week.
I know Jim Van Ness had told me, I don't want to speak for him if you guys want to talk, but he had mentioned the funeral as well. He's like, it was just the way he acted, the Richard Shepherd act, he said was definitely very strange.
And
he's
like, suspect. You know, and
he's like, that kind of raised some red flags for everyone. Just
your murdered
wife is is in the coffin, and I guess just not the way you would expect somebody to respond, but you never know, people respond different ways.
Yeah. Grief. But what did he do? What was he acting like?
I remember, again, like Jim could tell you better, because he was there, and I wasn't, but
my mother put her arm around him, and he had on not a winter coat, just a corduroy sports coat. She said his back was just soaking wet.
Sweat.
Yeah. So he must have been very, very nervous. And then, of course, the casket was open for us to look at her. It was very important for Chuck to see her because of the condition he saw. And when he looked, he kind of said, I didn't think it'd be like this. And then he said, I'm going to go get some flowers. I'll see you in a little while. And he never came back.
What did you guys think of that when he said, I didn't think it was going to be like this?
Well, it's just kind of an odd thing to say. It's not going to be pretty, no matter... I mean, people can say, gee, they looked good, but they don't.
They don't, right, yeah.
You know, there were some marks, because she died of asphyxiation, there were marks on her face. And they did a remarkable job, considering that, you know, she was there for quite a while.
Was it odd that Richard had his brother with him? I remember Jim had said that he thought that Richard's brother was kind of trying to shield him from everybody else. I don't know if that...
I don't remember his brother being there.
Yeah, I remember he said something, kind of doing interference, kind of getting in between him and everybody else.
Yeah, he just said that's the way that it seemed to him, was that the brother was kind of trying to keep him from having to, I don't know, answer questions or deal too much with it. But, you know, like I said, too, you don't know how people deal with grief or all of them in their own way.
And they're also estranged at the time, so maybe they thought maybe...
Wasn't there a letter from him thrown in the trash can? Was there a letter from him?
No, that was to the guy that she'd been talking to in Colorado. That she'd written, what it looked like was that she'd started writing a letter a couple different times, rip it up, start writing it again, not like how it sounds, or, you know, but that was, that was somebody out in Boulder that Tom Mitchell and, Lieutenant Kane went out and talked to out
he called
there.
Me. He called me about 11 o'clock one night, and he goes, nobody will talk to us. I'm like, really? So I gave him a name of somebody that worked for the, like, NIMO. I said, go see him. He'll give you names. He'll give you addresses. See if you
out
can
in
find
Colorado.
Yeah. He goes, I can't find anybody. So that helped. So he could track down some people.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History. where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
What was this letter that this was found in her trash?
Yes. At this, it looks kind of like it was the same letter, but written a couple different times and, you know, ripped up and then discarded in the trash can.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but in one of the letters that she even writes, I've written this letter about 8 times. I keep tearing it up.
Oh, okay.
You know, so she's like, I'm writing this letter and I keep tearing this thing up. I'm probably going to tear this one up. And she would tear it up because they picked all that stuff out of the waste paper basket, pieced it back together. Yeah. So,
and it was to a man?
Just to a guy out in Colorado.
Do you remember his name?
Not off the top of my head. That's it.
Did she ever finish a letter and write it to him? I mean, send it to him?
I
don't know if there was a whole letter that was mailed out or not.
Not that we know of.
They did talk to him.
Right. I knew that was their main focus when they were going out to Colorado. Do you remember him from when she was out there?
I do.
Boyfriend of hers? Or?
He was briefly a boyfriend. She had a few.
And then he was quickly eliminated as a suspect.
Yeah, they weren't going out that long.
Yeah, in Colorado at the time. There was a couple other, I just remember, weird characters from the case file from the Colorado time. And she was like seeing a cop who was then indicted by the FBI.
I think he ripped me off.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Stole from you?
Yeah. Everything was taken. And who would know? I think they were getting off the subject, but who would know I wasn't going to be home that night? Sheila and this ex-cop. Wasn't he a cop?
I think he went to prison. He was. They went out and talked to some informant or somebody. Said he's a cop, but he's ripping off drug dealers. Apparently other people, perhaps.
Well,
I think he got...
I was married to a drug dealer.
Was he?
Not at the time. Mm-hmm. But he knew it was in the house. You know, there were some nice antiques and stuff like that. Did anybody ever talk to him?
Yeah, they talked to him, and I want to say he ended up getting arrested. It's like during a robbery. They were robbing some place or something after he'd been fired as a police officer, and then he was in custody at the time. I'm pretty sure he went away for, if not ever, for quite a while.
But not considered a suspect in this. And
no, but just an odd, kind of character to come across that
she
certainly
made.
What's he capable of.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What else was in the trash?
Nothing really of substantial, or evidentiary value. Again, you'd have to ask Tom Mitchell why that letter was as focused in on as it was.
Yeah.
But I think just because he seemed like the closest thing to
somebody,
to a boyfriend.
And
I think she mentions in there, I want to come back out to Colorado or you can come here.
I don't think he was as interested in her as she was in him. Did they wipe everything off in the apartment? Was there any other fingerprints besides Chuck's?
Oh, I don't know. You'd have to... I'm not sure how they processed it at the time. We still have, a lot of stuff, like I told you.
Yeah. But, what we were told at the time was that somebody took the time and effort to wipe glasses off that were sitting on the table and that there weren't any other fingerprints but Chuck's on the window and Chuck's on the lock.
No, I'd never heard that. But there's also a lot of things that I've heard before even working on this case, just living in town, that once you start working on it, that's more legend than fact.
How often did you go to her apartment? Because you were only there 10 days.
I was only here 10 days.
I dropped
the trunk off.
And you were never actually in the apartment when you dropped the trunk off, right?
No.
Okay.
The door was locked.
Yeah. But you had been in her apartment before?
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
I was in it when it was Mrs. Ladd's. The old lady we used to bring holy water to. I grew up right next door.
Oh, so you'd been in there before?
Yes,
she
had been in there before.
Oh, okay.
I always thought it was kind of a spooky building.
It's got a look to it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
almost like an Amityville
yeah,
house.
It was very scary.
Did you look at the pictures that were in the trunk?
Yeah.
Were there any pictures of, like, her exes or...
Her, the baby, Shep.
Yeah.
California, because that's where they were. Those were the pictures. Pictures of, like, her life up to that point.
Okay.
Any other boyfriends or guys in those pictures that you recall?
Mm-mm.
No. Any other women she was close to that you know?
Not that I know of, but I guess there's that one girl.
Yeah, I don't... It was...
We don't know.
Like I talked about before, that was one of those theories where could
what
the killer
if?
Have been a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, any other friends that she might have talked about another... relationship with?
That girl from Worldwide.
Yeah.
Patricia?
Yes. She's the one that came looking.
Right, that had gone to the teacher had sent to the house, okay. her and another
Didn't,
student.
She left a note in the mailbox.
I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, I remember hearing
remember
something.
That?
Yeah, it was a letter or something. That
where
they
are you?
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember hearing something. I don't know how, though, I heard it.
And it was another woman that Patricia went with?
Went to Worldwide. To the school.
Yeah,
and,
she's
and she was sent
since
back.
Since passed away.
Okay.
Has
the second, not Patricia. Patricia we talked to. She was local as well. We went and talked to her. But yeah, they went on Monday, hear the radio, no response.
The radio
go back
was
to
a,
class. And then Tuesday.
Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday when they go now a second day, she hasn't come to school, and they tell this... teacher at Worldwide, who was the one that was concerned enough that she called, I guess, Marcia.
Mm-hmm. Marcia came to me.
The radio you said when you went in there, you only heard it from inside the building.
Yeah,
it wasn't
real loud. I mean,
you
got up
outside.
To her apartment and you could hear that the radio was on, but it wasn't like loud as near as I can remember. It was just something that struck you. If nobody's in there, why is the radio on? I know she wouldn't leave it on.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that there were fingerprints taken from, like, the radio knobs or dials.
Yeah, I can't really... can't say.
Yeah.
You know, you hear all kinds of things after the fact, too. Like, the cop got sick, and which I don't know if it's true or not.
Which... Oh, at the scene, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't... I wasn't...
Well, I would have.
Yeah.
You know, those things don't happen in Saratoga.
I was just going to say that's something that they had never seen
no.
before. Yeah.
I mean, you've had transients sometimes turn up in the park or...
Sure, how we get
in
our...
In August or something, but not somebody in their apartment.
We get our share of dead people like
yes.
in another city,
yeah,
but not
city, yeah.
so
yeah.
much murdered.
No, murdered.
Dead people.
I know her husband, you said, was an alcoholic, but was he a neat person, like fastidious?
I don't know. I met him. They were on their way back from Germany, so I was living in Colorado, but my husband and I had split up, and so I came back here, and then I heard she was coming, so I stayed a little bit longer, and then I went to Colorado, and they said, well, we're not going that way because, you know, it's out of the way, and she called me from about a block away. We're right here. They came and stayed. That's really the first time I met him was when they got back from Germany. He seemed like a nice guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you, so you never got a bad feeling from him or
no.
anything? What branch of the military was he in?
Army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had Sheila smoked from an early age?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming it's the 80s, like...
Yes. Her mother smoked, you know, her father smoked. It was just something you did, not thinking...
She have a particular brand that she's...
Marlboro.
Marlboro's?
Yeah. She tried to quit. She tried to quit in Colorado. And so, you know, everybody's sleeping. You can hear in the middle of the night going through the ashtrays and the trash cans trying... I'm like, Sheila.
Oh, no.
You can't do this. You're going to have to go get a pack of cigarettes tomorrow.
Did her husband smoke too?
Yeah.
He must have. He was in the army. They both smoked Marlboros?
She smoked Marlboros. I don't know what he smoked. I smoked Merit Menthols. She didn't want mine.
what were the menthols back then?
Mine was Merit.
Merit, okay.
Or they had these Eves. I thought, oh, mm-hmm. those are pretty because they had flowers around the top. So, hey, let me have one of these. I never smoked a lot. But I remember her listening to Pink Floyd with the headphones on. Well, she was 5'7".
She was 5'7"?
She was 5'7". She's living with me, and I'm trying to yell at her because she went to my husband's going away party. I can never forget it. She's just laughing. I'm like, you gotta stop laughing because I'm really mad.
Was she tough?
No, she was just laughing. No, she wouldn't hurt a fly. Mm-hmm. I can still hear her laughing at me. Don't you do that again.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. Okay, Lance, a lot of information in this episode, some really interesting things to take from it. Again, it is packed with info. It doesn't really feel like it at times, but when you break it down, there's really a lot there.
Yeah, from an investigative standpoint, there are a lot of details that could mean something, right? The bubblegum in her stomach, which was a detail that I kind of didn't really remember until listening back. And a lot of this information was refreshing to just listen to, knowing that, not to pat ourselves on the back, but knowing that we were able to carry a conversation with law enforcement, with family members, and have them give us these details that may or may not be important to the investigation. I mean, it does sound mundane, bubblegum in her stomach. But when you think about the night of the crime, someone was in her apartment. Did that somebody break in, or were they invited? If they were invited, did they have dinner? If she doesn't have anything in her stomach, just bubblegum, well, then you can eliminate dinner. So where does that leave you? So it's these little investigative nuggets that you can pull from this.
Yeah, I think that says a lot because it's likely that Sheila invited this person in because there's no signs of a break-in, but they didn't have dinner. I think that's interesting. And to note that Sheila was stabbed with a knife in her apartment that, you know, came from her kitchen after she was murdered is also interesting because, again, they did not eat dinner in the apartment before Sheila was murdered, even though this killer was invited in. And it's mostly really just evidence probably that Sheila was on a diet and chewing gum, I think, likely at the time of her attack, and probably is why she swallowed the gum.
Another one of the details that obviously stands out in hearing back is the behavior of Sheila's estranged husband, Richard, who was described as being extremely nervous at the funeral, which is understandable. Even though his wife is estranged, she was just murdered out of the blue. So even if you're estranged, your relationship isn't what it used to be, you would expect the husband to be a little bit unnerved at his wife's funeral after she was murdered. But when Terry describes how he was sweating through his clothes, that's kind of a red flag, or maybe even like a partial red flag, because again, you can start sweating if you're anxious, if you're at somebody's funeral. He might have been having the early stages of an anxiety attack. Him saying that he was going to go get flowers and then never returning is a huge red flag.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, how could you do that? How could you? I mean, I understand being there might be difficult if that this was a loved one and she was murdered, but just showing support for her and for her family, and you know, they share a child together. They shared a very young child together at the time Sheila was murdered. So, yeah, that strikes me as huge red flag as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that you can't really predict the behavior of somebody in that situation, but just not even thinking about bringing flowers in the first place and then it occurring to you only later on. And it seemed like it occurred to him after people were recognizing that he was not behaving in a manner that would be appropriate at that time.
Yeah. And then we hear in, I think it's the next episode, that flowers seem to disappear from Sheila's grave. So no idea if that has any connection to that comment made at the funeral, but it's also a weird thing that we'll discuss in part 6.
Oh, yes. And I do look forward to discussing that because we'll get into the location of the grave and the marker on the grave and how it's not an obvious place. And there's many other flowers if someone was stealing flowers from graves.
And another detail that could be very personal here in this episode that we just played is the trunk of belongings that Terry left for Sheila. So she said she left them outside of her apartment door, which is inside the building, but just outside of her door. And there, I think it's stated in there might be 8 apartments. So very little room there for a neighbor to have, you know, gone through them. Based on a conversation that Terry remembers having with Sheila's mom, where Sheila's mom spoke with Sheila about seeing the photos that Terry had left in that trunk for Sheila, and they were photos from their time together in Colorado. Based on that, it's interesting to note that it doesn't seem like those photos were in the apartment or they weren't really accounted for afterwards. But what we're getting at here is there were photos of Sheila's time in Colorado in that trunk that was moved into Sheila's apartment by Sheila, and Sheila even told her mom that she saw those photos, and which was later translated to Terry. Those pictures are not necessarily accounted for and could have been taken by the killer.
Yes, thank you for explaining that, because it's one of those moments in life where you don't think about any ramifications or anything to the effect of someone's going to have to remember this later on just in case something bad happens. Sheila just did what she does. She brought these in, she looked at them, had a conversation mentioning them, which became a detail in her own murder. By mentioning those photos to her mom, just, I guess, kind of in an offhanded way, that confirmed that she had those photos. And then cut to post-murder, those photos aren't there. Those photos were of her in Colorado. They're not there. And her mom communicates that by saying, photos aren't here, but she told me she was looking at them. So where are they? I think that's huge. And I think when you couple that with the letters that were found in her trash to a man in Colorado. And that, in my opinion, could be a very important detail.
Yeah, not necessarily to that man in Colorado, but to something more personal. Again, this killer was likely let into the apartment by Sheila, and it's possible that some photos of Sheila's time in Colorado were taken by the killer after her death. There also explained in this episode was a letter that Sheila was writing to someone that she had gone out with in Colorado and sort of crumpled it up and threw it away in the trash before she finished writing it. But, you know, is it possible the killer saw that? Yeah, I would say, you know, I would say it's totally possible that the killer saw that. What I would also add is that it doesn't sound like there are any real viable suspects from Sheila's time in Colorado, even though there is an interesting sort of aside about a former police officer who might have robbed Terry that does come up in this conversation, but he really wasn't a suspect in Sheila's murder. All right, everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Look out for part 6 coming on Monday. Thanks a lot for listening.